And our third storyteller is someone I heard about long before I met him or heard him tell a story. John Wasco, I heard, gave a birthday for himself every year, a birthday party. And to that party, he invited people, and the cost of admission was a story. And so before I ever met him, I knew I liked him. He is a board member of the Seattle Storytellers Guild and has been for 3 years. He's going to do a program tonight called Stories from the Heart. He has a large repertoire, and he just put out a new CD, which is comprised of all original stories. So please welcome John Wasco.
Okay. Well, I've got three stories for you tonight, and I'm going to get right to them. The first one is called Lightning. I was living in Seattle in 1984, and a movie came out with Robert Redford, The Natural. That was a great movie. It was about baseball. But really, underneath it all, it was about fathers and sons, and had this great visual symbolism of artificial light, electric light, versus natural light, lightning. And I thought, oh, wow, this is a great film. My stepson's got to see this film. We got to see this together. And so one lovely late afternoon in the summer of 1984, we did just that in the University District. And as we watched, and as the film got towards its conclusion, there's all this crazy lightning in the film. And it's just like, wow. And then the hero overcomes the difficulties. The film comes to a resolve. And it's over. And we walked out of that film together, father and son. And it was like the film had never ended. We stepped out into the biggest lightning storm Seattle had ever had. I mean, it was all over the place, and it wouldn't stop. It just went on and on, lightning strike after lightning strike. And all we could do was go, wow. Well, we got in the car, and I drove him home, dropped him off, and I headed back towards my place in West Seattle, Alki Beach. And as I'm driving, the lightning's still going on like crazy. And then I get to thinking, is this a sign from God? You see, I was just about to enter graduate school to become a counselor. And I knew I wanted to work with men. Maybe because we need it. Maybe because counseling had been so helpful to me after my own divorce. So I'm thinking that movie and this lightning is, you know, am I supposed to work with men around issues of fathers and sons? Is that what I'm hearing? So I decide to say a prayer as I'm starting to go up towards and on to the big West Seattle Bridge. And I pray, Lord, if you want me to work with men around fathers and son issues, these complicated issues, then let this car be hit by lightning. Well, I don't want any wishy-washy signs, you know. The one where you go, oh, well, the sun came up, yeah, but it does that every day. You know, it's like it's a sign, or no, maybe it wasn't a sign, or maybe it was all my imagination. No! I wanted a sign. Or I want to know if this was a sign. And so as I said that prayer, and the lightning was still flashing above, and I'm starting to go up the incline of the West Seattle Bridge, crack, boom, and the car shook. The lightning flashed the thunder pealed. It didn't hit me, didn't hit the car. But every light on the West Seattle Bridge went out. Close enough, I said. Now, if anybody ever tells you God doesn't have a sense of humor, don't believe them. And ever since then, I have gone into the field of counseling and worked with men around some very difficult issues. My work as a domestic violence therapist has included working with those difficult issues around fathers and sons and how that has gone awry sometimes. And I guess I must be doing something right, because after 20 years of doing that work, I still haven't been hit by lightning. Thank you. This next story is called Still There. The great American writer Studs Terkel referred to his own mother as a feisty little sparrow. And I think that applied to my own mother as well. She had a real adventurous spirit. And one example of that, at 75, she came up to visit me in Seattle. She flew up from Florida. And when the visit was over, she took a bus all the way down the coast and then over to the Grand Canyon. She'd never seen the Grand Canyon, and she wanted to. And then she was going to fly back to Florida. Now, the bus she took was the Green Tortoise. And if you don't know what the Green Tortoise is, it's a hippie bus line. And they take out, someone's been on that bus. And they take out all the seats and they throw in a bunch of pillows, and it's mostly a bunch of college-age kids with backpacks and this 75-year-old woman. And she loved it. She had a great time. She's such a people person. The one thing she balked at is when they stopped in Oregon and went to a waterfall and went skinny dipping, she stayed in the bus on that one. But the rest of it, she just loved the company, the conversation, the adventure. But my mother is no longer 75. She's in her 90s. And starting a few years ago, we could tell that she was experiencing the ravages of Alzheimer's disease. Step by step, little bit by little bit, she was starting to lose her ability to find words, to remember things she'd known all her life. And it got to the point where, after some time, she could no longer care for herself and needed to go into a nursing home. That nursing home is about 20 minutes away from my brother in southern Illinois. And I would visit her once a year and call her every week. But the first time I went out there, I really wasn't quite sure what I was going to experience, what I was going to find. And as I came upon the nursing home, it was one of these nondescript, one-story brick buildings, and then there was this big old three-story house next to it. And I walked up to the door, and there's a sign that says, "Stop. Press this button before you open this door. Because if you don't, an alarm goes off. They want to know if somebody on the inside is trying to make a break for it." Well, I opened that door and I realized that I was about to enter a very different world and leave the greater world that I knew behind. I went through that door and round the corner and down the long hallway. It kind of had an institutional feel to it, and it kind of smelled a little bit of, well, it kind of smelled a little bit. And you could see people in wheelchairs around the nursing station. And some of them had a real vacant look. Some were agitated and confused. And the nurses, they looked like they had their hands full trying to care for all these people. I continued to walk down the hall to my mother's room, and there she was, in good spirits, with her sense of humor intact. She looked at me and said, "You look kind of familiar." And I'm not sure if she knew who I was or wasn't at that point, but she quickly warmed up to the idea that I was still her son. The thing about nursing homes, those funny things can happen in them. My brother told me one time when he was visiting our mom that she was fussing with her false teeth. They were bothering her. Something wasn't quite right. So he said, "Well, here, Mom, let me look at him." So she took him out, and he looked at him, and he said to her, "Mom, these aren't your teeth." Well, they looked around, and they found her teeth, and all was well. But they never found the other person who belonged to the other set of teeth. Funny things can happen in a nursing home. And then the first time I went, from her own home, I saw she still had a big picture of Jesus, a Sacred Heart of Jesus, above her dresser. On a following trip, I went, the picture of Jesus was gone. I said, "Mom, what happened to your picture of Jesus?" She said, "I don't know." And she didn't. But it got me to thinking, who steals a picture of Jesus? Funny things can happen in a nursing home. I would take her out, drive her over to the park, just so we could kind of walk in fresh air, green trees, grass. She saw a little girl swinging, and she was just delighted. We sat and watched that little girl for about 20 minutes. She was just so happy. And then she said, "Okay." I said, "Oh, you're ready to go?" "Yep." And we started walking back towards the car. And she had her cane that she used mostly for balance. And she pointed to it. She said, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, that's a big pile of wood chips. They're going to spread those around for mulch, you know, around the trees, around the flowers, keep the weeds down." And then I looked at her and smiled, and I said, "If I were 8 years old, I would run up to the top of that pile of wood chips, and then I would turn around and I'd run right back." And she looked at me and smiled. She said, "Go ahead." And I did. I ran right up to the top, and I turned around, and I bounded down, and I just landed right in front of her. And we both laughed. And then I looked at her, and I smiled. And I said, "Okay, it's your turn." And she said, no, I get it. Okay. And so then, with her cane, she's walking up this pile of wood chips to the top, about 6 feet high, and she turns around and finds her way back down the pile of wood chips. Another time, she needed some winter gloves. So when we were out for lunch, I stopped at a dollar store and bought her 3 pairs. You know, you got to have your name on everything at the nursing home, and even then, stuff disappears. So I bought her 3 pairs, 3 for a dollar. And when we got to the cash register, she saw something, and she went, "Oh, oh." She couldn't find the words, but she put her foot up on a low counter, and she pulled up her pant leg, and she pointed to the scissors and to the band around her ankle. They had put a band around her ankle because if you go out of the nursing home without having that deactivated, it sends an alarm. And I looked at her and I said, "No, Mom, we gotta leave that on. It's safer, it's better that way." Well, she was a little disgruntled and a little disappointed, but she adapted. We went back to the nursing home, and there we would talk, we would sing. Around Christmas time, we'd sing the carols, the Christmas carols. She still remembered those, and we'd pray. she still remembered most of the Our Father. And then I told her, well, you know, it's time for me to go and fly back to Seattle, where I live. Seattle, she said. She said that every time I told her that I lived in Seattle. Well, then she said, son of a gun. Now, my mom had gotten to the point where it was getting hard to remember words and what she wanted to say to find the words. And so she'd come upon a pat phrase, a way of just saying something when she was a little confused or couldn't find the words to describe what was going on. And that was, son of a gun. And then she said, okay, you go, and I'll wave. So we walked out of her room, and I walked a few steps down the hallway, and I turned around, and there she was, smiling and waving. I walked a few more steps down the hall, turned around, and there she was, smiling and waving. I walked a few more steps, turned around. She was still smiling and waving. And I knew that when I went around that last corner and went out that final exit to a much different world, she would still be there. As I flew home on the airplane, I started to wonder, how many more times will I be able to come and see my mom? And I knew each time I did, she would have slipped a little more, a little less memory, a little less recognition, a little harder time putting words out there. And we all knew where this was headed. But I also knew that every step of the way, she would still be there, smiling and waving. I knew that when she went around that final corner and went out that last door to a very different world, she would still be there. Thanks. Sherry will be happy to know that I'm running ahead of schedule, so I know she's always. Let's see. Well, the next story I'd like to tell comes by way of Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa, and it is with his permission that I tell it. The Archbishop did a wonderful thing. He gathered prayers from all over Africa, from every part of the continent, from every tribe, from every people, from every period of time, and he brought them together, and he put them into a book, an African prayer book. And that is where I first heard this story. Mokopa, Mokopa, Mokopa. Is it not a beautiful word? Mokopa is a village in South Africa. And the people in Mokopa, like people everywhere, they work, they struggle, they laugh, they cry, they hope, they dream, they raise their children. And they come together and pray to God. But it was in the time of apartheid. The government wanted to separate the people by color. They wanted to make everything very difficult. But it was not enough to make things difficult. They wanted to make things impossible. And so the government sent the their soldiers with their guns and their bulldozers to Mogopa. And they were there at gunpoint to take the people far away from the land that helped to give them a sense of their identity, far away to township land. And they were to destroy the village, house by house, school and church. What is this? What is going on? People came out of their houses. They could not believe it. They were beside themselves with grief. And then an elder came out, and in a loud voice, he prayed, "God, thank you for loving us so much." What? How can he pray like that at a time like this? But how can a man who puts his faith in God pray any other way? And then they started to remember the stories they had heard about God's promises and God's faithfulness. He had not abandoned them. He was with them in the midst of their suffering and their sorrow, and he was for them. At gunpoint, they were loaded on the trucks and taken far, far away, and the village was flattened. There was no work in the township land. The land itself was poor. And so the men, they had to go far, far away, live in dormitories, and work deep in the mines to have money to send home. They would have to do this for 11 months of the year, separated from their wives, their sweethearts, their children. Life had become impossible. But that was a long, long time ago. They struggled on with faith, and the government that was is no more, and apartheid is no more. And the people, they started to come back to the land that had helped give them a sense of their identity, to work, to struggle, to laugh, to cry, to hope, to raise their children and come together and pray to God and raise their village, house by house, school and church. Thank you, God, for loving us so much. The elder, he was right all along, but it was so hard to see back then. To see with eyes of faith is a difficult thing, but it is a good thing. Sometimes it is the only thing. So now, if you know someone who is beside themselves with grief, if you know someone whose life has been flattened, if you know someone, who is beside themselves with grief and life has become impossible, then perhaps you will remember to tell them about a promise and a place and a people called Mogopa. Thank you.